Welcome back, everyone, to Web3 Unpacked. I'm Rich Pasqua, and joining us today, we're happy to have Anastasia Platnikova, CEO of Fidium, a seamless digital asset solution for modern banking dynamics. Welcome, Anna.
Thank you so much for having me, Rich. I am an avid listener and upvoter of Web3 Unpacked on YouTube, so I couldn't be more excited to be here today.
Awesome. Not only you're into Web3, you're a fan. I love that, and we love that. And thank you for that. And Anna, I get to know my guests, and it's really interesting what you find out about their history, your history. And you have a really rich history in finance, both traditional and DeFi, working with many crypto companies, including being the CEO of Blockbank, handling global compliance to crypto tax, business growth and development on both sides of the TradFi and DeFi world. And that's pretty amazing. And that's something that you sometimes don't get. And what we very much need in this world is an understanding of the traditional worlds and the new Web3 tech worlds and crypto worlds. You also have won a prestigious multinational banking award. That's pretty interesting and very important for our listeners to kind of understand that too. So
I'll tell you,
really cool background.
That was such an adventure for the whole company and us to go through the whole MasterCard process. But perhaps before we dive in into, you know, the products, just a few words, as you mentioned, about my journey. Well, first of all, I was born in Lithuania, and Lithuania is a post-Soviet country. So for people in our region, and I think to some extent in South America, when we hear crypto, it makes sense. Because unfortunately, some regions, we really went through turbulent times, especially when it comes to different fiscal affairs. So indeed, you are right. I'm a lawyer by trade, and I started my career working in the European Union law enforcement agencies. And that gave me a very good and complex perspective on how things run on the European level, legally, cross-jurisdictionally, how countries and entities cooperate or don't cooperate, you know, between each other. Then I joined private sector, and I was working as a chief operational officer for a global compliance company. And we built there something very interesting. That was the application of blockchain as a tech, no token, no nothing, and machine learning to trace efficacy of cannabis products for medical purposes. And that company has a patent, and it is being used by Canadian veterans. So that showed me how blockchain can be used for social good. And in 2017, I was very lucky and blessed to join an Aave. Back then it was Eflend, and now it's the largest decentralized lending protocol. So I have this passion for tech. I just get crypto and love the principles and everything what it represents, minus some darker sides, of course. And here at Fidium, we were trying to merge those things together, reg compliance, because we can't go too far without it, as well as just tech and actually the benefits it can bring to users.
And I love the idea that, you know, one of the things I really enjoy is having guests on that are leading businesses in Europe, you know, because it's a different thing. It's slightly different. It's the same as the US, but there's a lot of necessity that comes with crypto in developing nations, Europe. You guys generally see pain points before the US does. Eventually we do too. So you're actually building solutions for problems that really do exist. And the Americans are just kind of, you know, we're doing our thing. Those problems generally ripple into our world as well. But you guys tend to be at the front lines of things because of necessity. So that's awesome.
It is.
And you are. Yeah.
Point. Sorry for interrupting. It's a very interesting point you mentioned, yeah. Because even Europe itself, it's such an interesting fractured entity. You know, we have Western European countries, you know, we have our instant euro payments, and then you have this whole history and the rest of the European continents where things can be really improved. And I remember a few years ago when I visited Canada and I opened bank account there, I got a checkbook, and I was so shocked that, you know, checks still exist as actual paper checks.
I'm always shocked by having to, there's always that one or two vendors that you have to pay by a check, and it's so antiquated and weird. but we've had guests on from Brazil, and they're actually, you know, that excuse me, they're working with the government to help build out exchanges so that people can actually transact properly. So it's really fascinating to kind of dive into that world. Awesome. Now, we're gonna go into the finer points of Fidium, but can you give us the the elevator pitch, if you will, or the quick overview of Fidium?
Absolutely. So, Fidium is a fintech firm, and we have a very clear mission. We're on the mission to streamline the digital transformation of small to medium enterprises, as well as larger financial institutions on their way path to digital asset adoption. Because we see a lot of hindrances that exist on the market, and our goal is to fix that. Our goal is to widespread adoption of cryptographic assets as wide as possible.
and Fidium is basically pioneering the integration of traditional finance, right? TradFi to DeFi. Could you explain how Fidium serves as, and I thought this term was interesting, a one-stop shop for TradFi businesses looking for traditional DeFi solutions, in particularly around terms of service like connecting the two DEXs and everything else that comes with it. This world is wildly, wildly detailed. So being a one-stop shop is like music to a lot of people's ears, whether you're a smaller institution or a much larger financial institution. How does all this work, and what does that mean to you guys?
This is a very good, and actually this question has a lot of depth to it. Because when we come to a business owner and imagine a game development store or just a blockchain development company with 50 employees all over the world, when we're coming to them and we say, "Hey, use our services," they don't want to have more work. Our job is not to educate our customers how they can download one of the non-custodial wallets. They're very busy running their day-to-day. So my approach is it shouldn't be a revolution, we should do it evolution. Because when we open bank accounts as a small to medium enterprises, they're not lecturing us. So this is how we send your funds. And sometimes in the blockchain industry, we're guilty of that. We're so fascinated and happy by the tech we have that we're trying just to shove it down people's throats. And it's not a good way to onboard users. So when we started Fidium, we saw, first of all, there is a very noticeable disconnect. So on one side, financial institutions, as well as small and medium enterprises and their shareholders and owners, they want to dive in into digital assets. But how they're going to do that? They're not going to do just to watch some YouTube videos, or maybe perhaps they will, and just embark on the journey solo. And then they will see what's happening on the news with all the scandalous, crypto affairs. So our job is to give them product that looks like just like traditional banking, but a bit better. Because there they can transact with both fiat and crypto assets. And what is important for these customers, it's security, simplicity, and just ease of use. So we try to do just that. And then on top of that, they want a just seamless experience. Yeah, you remember earlier years of crypto, how horrible a lot of interactions were. And some of them tried that and they said, "No, thank you." So our job is to show that crypto is legit means of just sharing the value, paying suppliers, reporting your taxes, and doing all normal accounting.
Yeah, and it's the point that you bring up that really resonates with me, and I think will resonate with all of our listeners here, is the idea of being able to, just because you're in finance doesn't mean you're, like, to your point, you're not a techie. Maybe you don't care about technology.
Exactly.
And in a lot of cases they don't, but they do understand that the blockchain is bringing on new capabilities, speed, efficiencies, and really a tremendous amount of cost savings. So they want it, but they don't necessarily want to learn how the sauce is made. You know what I mean? They just want to start using it. And, you know, one of the things that's near and dear to my heart, having gone through the advent of the first, you know, Web.1, whatever you want to call it, is adoption and onboarding. And that equates to good user experience. To your point, if it's not there and it doesn't, it can't assimilate or kind of roll into their daily workflows and workforces, for that matter, it's gonna be really painful. And you just want to eliminate that pain point and get people on and using it. That's amazing.
I couldn't agree more, because even right now, and perhaps you'd agree, we see this wonderful two universes. On one hand, we have these large financial institutions implementing permission blockchains for their purposes. Amazing, we're applauding it. Then you see just meme coin fiesta ongoing, which is important just for, I think, visibility. And it's there are a lot of pros and cons. But those two worlds, they don't overlap. If we want an actual adoption, use of crypto for payments and other bills, we need to merge that and find those people in between who are not large banks, and they're not, let's say, they're not investors into meme coins. There is a large category of people that are still underserviced.
Yeah, yeah. And it's wildly complex. Once you start to, your first foray, I don't care if you're a big company or an individual, into crypto taxation, you take a step back and go, oh my God, why the hell did I even get involved in this? It's so detailed. Then you realize, okay, it's really not that bad. And with the right tools for a large organization or an individual, it really can be done, and it can be fun because everything's open and trackable. Now there's other tools you can add to it, which we're going to get into for you guys. But since we're talking about usability, and you know, this is a business product, right? So yeah. Who are we talking to? Who is your core audience? And who needs this right now, and who's using it?
I'll tell you a little pre-story how Ethereum came into being. It was myself, Kelly and Darren, my co-founders, and we had, and it was almost 5 years ago, just a self-made non-custodial application with some very cool features, like a card top up. There was just one little problem. We didn't really think about monetization processes and infrastructure for that thing. But we onboarded a lot of users, and we learned so much from this amount of just normal retail users, what they want, what their problems are. We kept building on that, and we had a very ambitious objective to add DeFi as a fully and keep DeFi as fully non-custodial wallet, your keys, your crypto. But then, because we knew that we need to onboard new people to crypto, not experience, we wanted to add centralized parts, you know, where they're protected with KYC, where we can help them if they forget their passwords, you know, and all those kind of things. But then what is crypto without influx of fiat? So we decided, let's add fiat and cards. So long story short, we built all of that, and our users can enjoy from DeFi wallets, and they can spend their crypto on Apple Pay. That was long built, but we built that. And then we learned a lot, especially when it comes to just user behavior. What are their problems? What worries them? You know, what we can do better as a company. So we took that and we started to service licensed entities and companies, even like ourselves, like other Web3 companies. And mind you, by this point, we were already a licensed entity. We are licensed in the European Union through Lithuania. We have license in Canada, Australia, as well as El Salvador. So we repackaged what we had, and we just went to fellow Web3 companies and said, hey, do you need our services? How we can help you? Literally, I think 95% of them said, we need a bank account. We need a normal operational bank account, because crypto is not... One day we'll get there, but not yet.
Yeah.
Operational fiat bank account is a must. So we saw, and that was, I believe, last year, there is this category of clients that are too small for larger players. And those clients, they have, let's say, their assets between $500,000 and $10 million. They're too small for big guys, but they can grow. So we started to service them with white glove service. We love our clients. And it was a journey for both us and them. We grew together. We learned a lot from them and what they need. So we started servicing companies like ourselves. And then it escalated in a good way from there. Larger clients, again, we learned more from them. And then, as you mentioned in the beginning of our conversation, we were lucky and happy to join MasterCard Lighthouse program, where we started to cooperate and essentially inquire what large financial institutions want and need from blockchain. And the answers were pretty clear. They care about compliance. They care about regulatory needs. They care about solutions that will help their ML officers to do their job with, you know, spending as least time as possible, you know, because crypto, imagine logging in into crypto tracking solutions like Chain Analysis, if you're a newbie. Mm. Those solutions are truly amazing, but they're so hard. So everyone wants to do something with crypto, but somebody needs to do the first step. So we're trying to be that first step, and then we'll work with the clients together to see exactly what they need.
Really, really great points in there, Anna. So many things I love about what you said. The last point of where everyone wants to get into crypto, I see this all the time. Whether you're into meme coin or you want to get into meme coins or mint NFTs or track your finances or, you know, you're larger, there's always that first step is always the hardest. And if you say, hey, man, everything is good, we'll take care of you, we'll get you over the hump. And as soon as you start learning, you're actually going to have fun with this and actually save and or make a lot of money or, you know, enhance your products. That's important. And I also love the idea, and this is near and dear to my heart, is listening to end users, enhancing the user experience. And your story started with handling some of the big boys in the room first, and then realized there were real problems for smaller to mid-tier businesses, listened and then adapted. So that to me is really, really, really good stuff. And then as a complement to that, you know, this whole thing is having a turnkey solution is wonderful, right? Sometimes turnkey solutions don't always, not everything fits everyone, you know? So that's where somewhat of a bespoke solutions come into play. Can you help us understand when you're onboarding a new client, whether they're medium or larger financial institutions, how you listen and adapt and maybe create something that's more tailored to them?
Absolutely. And I'll tell you the story that will tie to this particular question, as well as just listening to your users. When we started servicing our B2B users, we realized, we just sat down and discussed what was our biggest problem. And our problem, being licensed entity with no anonymous shareholders, having 4 licenses and users and a working product, was to open a bank account. With all our documents and lawyers and in-house legal team, we just couldn't do it until we did. We learned the process very well, and also we saw how bureaucratic, complicated, but kind of needed it was, because you know, there are rules, there are IML rules, etc. So that is such a pain point for small and growing business that would like to pay its accountants, law firms. Unfortunately, not all law firms take crypto, even though they service crypto businesses, right? So it's and when we got those even bank accounts, I'm not going to disclose, you know, the institutions. Some of them has this, there's a one solution, and this is what you have. And it's absolutely not working with our needs. Yeah. So, you know, this is when somebody has a one-stop solution, it is fantastic. And perhaps it works very great. And we do see that it works fantastic for a category of clients. Let's say you have up to 50 people and you want to do global payroll, you know, in both fiat and crypto. Fantastic. But now imagine you are also would like to do some staking, or maybe you would like to add cards to your payroll. And there you start adding actual things that US business needs, because our job is to enhance your earnings. This is what we're doing here. And this is what you would like to engage with crypto, not because you're just a fan of tech, even though it can happen, but because you actually want to lock your clients, perhaps lock your suppliers. You want to accept payments globally in whatever currency your clients will pay you. And this is what we're here to do. So every time when we speak to a client, it is very simple. Imagine if we have a menu and there is a buffet with you see and you get what you see, or there is a la carte.
Yeah.
And from a la carte, it is not endless, not yet. And then we just go through it, because very often customers, they need a bit of hand-holding, and this is absolutely fine. We needed that as well. And we do just that. Maybe they need additional security training. Maybe they need additional integrating with their existing banking systems. So we do that. Mm. And every time we learn something, because there are so many businesses and e-commerce businesses, when you would never even think they would like to accept crypto. And then they will tell us, you know what, now almost 15% of our revenue comes from clients that pay in crypto. And then we're like, yes, job well done.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a rapidly evolving world we live in, and it is happening. You know, for many, many years, I would tell people, if you have the means, just pay me via crypto. And they're like, what do you mean? How do I do that? And it's like, all right, well, you know, but now it's getting to the point where that's all people are going to want, because it's so much easier and the benefits are inherent. Now, you, Anna, you touched a little bit on centralized versus decentralized exchanges, DEXs, or, you know, environments that Fidium is working within. And I think you need one to have the other, especially now in time. But can you help us understand or kind of delve into your approach to cybersecurity and digital asset custody? This is like the biggest thing on my mind. I always like to ask, like, well, not your keys, not your coins. How does that work? And how do you make people feel secure in their ownership or custody of their assets, and just, you know, from a cybersecurity standpoint?
This is a truly fantastic question. And interestingly enough, different customers, they require different things. And coming back to your question, DeFi versus CeFi, we do what we call HiFi, hybrid finance, because realistically, our users, they love what DeFi offers. It's efficiency, it is a transparency, but also they don't feel comfortable enough to, as you said, manage all the keys and all the affairs. Because again, we saw, you know, how many crypto losses there are on the market. So in this case, it is our job, it is our fiduciary responsibility to protect these B2B users, as well as retail users, if they're using our centralized part of the application. And we do it twofold. First of all, everything comes from the application, and I don't mean mobile application, just from the architecture design. It has to be as foolproof as possible. And that includes both user side as well as our side. And as I mentioned earlier, we do apply this hybrid approach. So we provide customers the ability to interact with some of the DeFi services if they wish, while in a sense handholding and guarding them through the different systems of multisigs. Because, you know, as a new user of the DeFi services, you can get into that vortex very easily and never see your funds again. So it's you proceed with caution. And overall, when it comes to financial industry, the security is paramount. And we see it with the credit cards or any other financial product or interaction when it comes to just to finances and people's finances. So we take this, what I would say, a multi-layered approach. So first of all, as I said, it's infrastructure, multi-factor authentication. It goes essentially now by default. Data encryption, you know, there are so many different standards and we implement all of them. But one thing what TradFi did right, and what we do as well, is a segregation of customer funds and companies' funds. And I know it sounds so obvious for anyone who worked or dealt with TradFi, but unfortunately, we saw so many bad examples on the crypto market, especially in 21, 22, and last year. Luckily, right now, regulation in both European Union and here in Lithuania, it stipulates very clearly. So we have a custody license, and it's mandated by law that we should not intermingle customer assets with our assets. So technically and legally, we can't do that. And we're getting periodic audit checks, and so on. And to be honest, I think this is one of the reasons why Europe didn't see so many crypto scandals, because certain rules, they were kind of implemented, I would say. Like those good TradFi rules that I must have.
Yeah, I'm really glad you kind of eased into the regulatory end of things, because it is quite different Europe to US. And I hate to keep making those distinctions, but the US literally has their heads in the sand with this stuff. And from people I've talked to in Europe or Central America, wherever you are outside of the US, everyone's trying to work together with the government, with each other to create a system that is turnkey and fluid. Whereas the US, and I'm I live here and I love the good old US of A, but man, let's just kind of put our differences aside. And, you know, everyone from, you know, especially like Brian Armstrong from Coinbase, he's a legend. He's awesome. He's actually inviting the SEC and other government institutions to collaborate. And that's kind of the nature of Web3. That's the nature of the whole world we're in. And that's why we like it. But they're rejecting it on the US side at every current turn. And it's interesting it's important for our listeners and viewers to hear this, because it doesn't have to be that way.
Exactly. So, and, you know, coming back to Coinbase is an extremely centralized exchange, and yet they're doing work for essentially the whole crypto industry in the US. And then Uniswap, the big fighters ahead of them as well. But what is very interesting, and I would say slightly bizarre from this European perspective, and mind you, Europe has always been lagging compared to US. Even when I was born and raised here, I'm very objective. Less VC funding, less innovation, best universities are already, you know, on your side. Mm-hmm. And again, fair enough. But somehow Europe, I think they got at least this one thing right. We didn't get too many things right. Maybe, you know, no passports, you know, you can travel freely, and crypto regulation. So I would say two things we got right. And I think it was made in order to foster more innovation. Because what was the case? You start a company in Europe and then you move to the US because it's just better opportunities, market is larger. And now we see so many fantastic US companies that are building in the US. Even let's take Uniswap, just truly unbelievable decentralized product. And now they're getting hit. But we see, unfortunately, a lot of, well, maybe less well-established startups are moving from the US either to Europe, maybe Middle East, where at least they know they can innovate safely. But again, all the VC funding and this actual opportunity to grow and grow massive is on your side. It's
super interesting, and it's a topic I personally never get bored of, because our greatest export here in the US is innovation and creativity. And once you put roadblocks in the way, we're all, Europe, Central America, US, everyone is building the roads together.
Yeah.
And let's just kind of hold hands and figure out the regulations a little bit together so we can innovate. We can be creative. We can work with partners overseas and not have to jump the pond to do business.
Yeah.
You know, that's sad. To me, it's sad, right? When you get, you know, the Coinbases of the world saying, hey, maybe we just move somewhere else. That would be devastating, actually.
Even though a lot of large US companies, they, including Coinbase, if I'm not mistaken, they already have licenses, you know, in UK or in the European continent. And this is absolutely fine in order to service your customers in the legitimate and legal way. But what sometimes hurts to see the most is the Coinbase, of a truly amazing company, the companies that are just beginning their journey, and they will go and get their legal advice, and their legal advice would be no, you can't do it, just no, find something else to do.
Exactly, and that's unacceptable. We have to have, you can't close the doors on people, especially on the greatest technology of this century. That's sitting in everyone's laps, and it's up to us to do something with it. It's a little wonky, and I'm going to keep at it and keep saying what I need to say. And I'm thankful for organizations like Coinbase and others that are kind of fighting, and to what you brought up before, centralized fighting for decentralized, yeah. which is ironic and fun and
because they will,
and important.
They come for us all. You know, this is where the crypto industry knows how to unite, in a sense. Not everyone has Coinbase's resources, but when needed, I think industry has to unite. And that was one of the things that I think partially, it didn't really shock me. I think in the early, maybe 17 and 18, perhaps 19, we were preaching, we're decentralized, we're here to unite us all. And then we were building in these little bubbles. No, I'm building on this protocol. There is no interoperability. You know, this should be only my chain and this is it. You should build only on that when the world is much bigger. So I think maybe now in late 2023 and 2024, we see actual products and chains and interoperability. It's a mouthful to say, just launching, trying to connect different layers, you know, and different parts of different blockchains. You know, to see use cases that we even don't know how they look like because they're being developed now. So this is what excites me, actually.
Yeah, and I like your the thinking that you put forward there as far as, we all started in little bubbles. And then it was almost like we were our own planets living alone, developing alone. Then they butted into, you know, universes. And then it's now becoming galaxies, right? So it's much bigger. But the lines between planets and galaxies and the entire universe are being drawn. The connections are being made. Yeah. So it's a beautiful thing. And you know, again, it's like one of those things that Web3 is about, especially now, it's about sharing knowledge. I've had several engineers and CEOs come on this podcast and say, we want our competitors to do well. We want them to learn from us. We want, and the folks that adopt that mentality, it sounds counterintuitive and like, ooh, you're not going to give away the trade secrets. Well, it's all out there anyways. And it's open source. So in most cases, so share, get feedback. The more you are able to give and pull in, the faster all of these roads are built. And all of this innovation happens. So really interesting.
100%, because we need to reach the same level. And this might be a slightly weird metaphor. You know how all central, you know, centralized financial institutions, how all banks, they work so closely with each other. Sometimes even that they get multi-billion dollar fines. This is how close they work. But they created a system that actually works. You know, it is not perfect, but it is global. You know, of course, they can do better with unbanked regions, but it works. I can send money to you. It will take probably 5 days and $100 to send you $100, but it works. So they build that network of thousands of banking institutions that actually work, you know, and all of them operate on the same rules. With crypto, we have to do the same. And it should come from companies like ourselves, our competitors, decentralized industry players and protocols, that if you as a user, you want to interact with us and them and them and them, you should be able to do that. You know, of course, we need to solve things like privacy on the blockchain, you know, or identity on the blockchain and those kind of things. So we have to build this proper layer one, not in the technological sense, but I would say even maybe in the mental sense, that, you know, we all operate, we all accept these rules, and then we can keep building on top of that.
Yeah. I mean, as wonderful as this world is, there's still a big, huge mental shift.
Yeah.
Even if you're in this world, and especially if you're kind of interested or even on the periphery of this world, to understand that what happens when you bake in trust. And you have zero trust environments now. It's a mind shift for people. You can't game the system the way you used to, or gamify it. It should be gamified, but game the system, if you will. It blows people's minds.
And sometimes if you game that trustless system, you know, then what happens next? There are so many also social consequences. Let's say if we're now putting so many things on the blockchain and it stays there forever, is it a good thing? What about the rights to be forgotten, you know, that exist in the, you know, probably in the US or here in the European Union? It's so this is, oh, and my computer is trying to update itself.
Uh-oh.
So yeah, it's it is a very interesting, also philosophical topics, because we're used to certain behaviors, and especially, you know, if I want to delete my account somewhere, you know, what happens to that data? You know, of course, a lot of large companies totally disregard your right to privacy, but now with the blockchains and everything staying on them, it's, you know, we'll have a new set of interesting challenges.
Yeah, and I love the whole philosophical end of and the societal impact end of this, these discussions, and we can go on forever and ever. And we've had so many interesting guests on where we're talking about IP, right? Intellectual properties, and how to maintain and control your own IP across Web3. And it's fascinating. It's happening, and it's actually beyond DeFi. Like, DeFi will be always be the big story, the darling of 2024 and beyond, in perpetuity probably. But IP is another big topic that is really important, super interesting, and needs to happen, because then you really start to see crazy changes and the dynamics of social media platforms and news outlets all start to change benefit the end user in a lot of ways, including monetarily. So fascinating. And I would love to have you back on just for that conversation.
Yeah, imagine your keys, your crypto, but when it comes to your privacy, personal information, and what are you willing to share, you know?
Yeah. You're deeply fascinated with that. And again, that is just like, it's going to blow. That's going to blow people's minds tremendously. So one of the things that I didn't touch on, and I was unsure of, is how you in the team at Fidium use AI. Cause I know that certain, protocols or products like yourselves use AI for predictive modeling and, you know, trading and for other things. How are you guys using it?
Most definitely not for trading.
No, not for trading. You know what I'm saying.
Yeah, 100%. So for us, at least now, you know, in 2024 or Q2 2024, at least we can start using word AI. Mm-hmm. Still, sometimes I'm a bit skeptical. Is it actual artificial intelligence or it's a very, very advanced model? Mm. So it's for us, AI is a very practical tool, how we can learn more about what is happening within the company and hence optimize those processes, as well as how we can optimize our customer support. Because again, it might sound trivial, but we provide services that are related to companies as well as people's finances. So you want to get that answer immediately, and that answer needs to be accurate. We did implement different GPT models on the back end of our operations to reduce number of tickets, the wait time. And interestingly enough, we started to do it fairly early, you know, before it became a trend. We use it as an actual tool in order to enhance our customers' experiences as well. And it massively reduced the wait times for our clients and all of other things. We are testing certain solutions for our clients so they can deploy AI. But it's a very thin line between financial advice and not financial advice. So our goal is to generate a highly educational content for users, both B2B and B2C, that are willing and they want to learn. But interesting fact is how are you going to verify if the information is correct? Because even now, a lot of AI models, they like to hallucinate. You know, it's... to put it mildly, we can pull a lot of information from Twitter and verify if it's true or not true. But you know that sometimes Twitter or X and other platforms, they're just such a mess with a lot of unverified information. So we're not releasing that yet, just for many reasons, but simply because it's very hard to test the accuracy of the initial input of the information. And there it comes, we're coming back to a discussion when news should be, and that accountability should be on the blockchain when it comes to social media, news, and etc. then at least we'll have an immutable layer that something was actually verified.
Yeah. Anna, really, all really great, great points. This is one of those other topics that, like, we could just launch off into cyberspace with this one. But it is interesting to hear and we're hearing it. They're like, well, AI everything. No, it's not AI everything. If you're smart, it's not AI. Use AI for specific things, not everything. Because to your point, a lot of these large language models and data pools, we are still trying to understand. The CEOs of these big AI companies are still trying to understand where the data is coming from, where it's being pulled from. If you can't answer that question unequivocally, we should probably really rethink the AI thing. But there are ways to use it successfully. And to your point, answering immediate, accurate, and direct answers to financial questions in a timely manner is a big deal, right? So having that data, those answers scrubbed and cleaned and ready to go for end users in a conversational manner is great. And then to your point, there's education on top of that. We can peel back the layers. It doesn't have to be everything to everyone right now.
100%. You know what I was very happy when we deployed this, essentially productivity enhancement tools, you know, this is what it is at this current state, right? Mm-hmm. That now we have happier support team and customer success team, less stress, and they can build actually more meaningful relationships with even some larger clients, in a sense that it's a less menial work and more actual comprehensive and listening to the clients and asking, okay, I'll solve this. What else can I help you with? Then you can actually start servicing your clients in the less formal way. Oh, you have an issue? Let me solve it. Now you're building that connection. You can actually listen to them much better. And other side, I think what our tech team and everyone is happy about, that different co-pilots, you know, that they also build themselves, they just enhance a lot of, again, tasks that nobody likes to do. Let's say like testing and other things. Certain things AI are very good for. It's different kinds of chatbots with very predefined parameters. Otherwise, we'll have funny hallucinations and answers, as probably we all saw, you know, online, what can happen. It's an interesting space. I think we're still so early. We saw this amazing advancements of GPT 2, 3, and 4 that all of us want to see more, but not yet. Well, all of us need to put more work into it.
Yeah. And, you know, you see all of these, you know, crazy AI tools out there. And it's like, well, some people think it's just going to like answer all your questions. And it's like, no, it's actually going to help you get to resolutions faster. It is a production tool. So to me, the less research or details I need to go through from a production standpoint gets me to the design phase faster and I'm happier.
Exactly.
You know, so.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I love it. It's really interesting, but you have to proceed, to your point, with caution and, you know, understand how to use it and when it's appropriate. So interesting.
Just like with a blockchain, Rich.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's not everything for everyone.
Yeah.
You don't need, you know, it's okay to say no to a client that you don't think needs Web3. I've told people before, hey Rich, can I use Web3 for this or that? Do I need NFTs? I'm like, no, you actually don't, but you might want to consider something else within Web3, you know, or outside of it, eventually everything will be kind of tied together within the Web3 universe. But right now, it's okay. And what a lot of people don't really understand, a lot of our listeners do here, but and you do certainly, but Web2 is here it's here and it's not going away because it is the gateway to Web3.
Yeah.
You know, it is a lot of it. So it is a marriage, just like TradFi and DeFi. They need to shake hands. They need to hold hands. Not separate. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting couple of years. And with that said, I want to know, Anna, what you're excited for within DeFi or even outside of DeFi within the Web3, you know, world, universe. What are you excited for in the next year or two?
Oh, there are so many good things that are happening. I'll start firstly from the centralized aspects. And forgive me, we're so licensed and regulated that I think I'm turning into a CeFi person. So please don't ban me from Web3. No. But
no, it's okay.
We see this very interesting trend, and when it comes to real world assets and tokenization. Now, the question is, we already went through this wave in 2017, and that nothing happened. So I'm really hoping that this time, with so much capital and people's trust being poured into RWAs, that this time, you know, those companies and that part of the industry will deliver. Now we have better infrastructure. We have also better blockchain infrastructure. And this is where Web3 comes in with the smart contracts and execution and all of that. What I'm slightly skeptical, though, and I'm truly hoping to be proven wrong, is that sometimes for the real world assets to be tokenized and used and traded and we're going to solve so many problems, sometimes we need this regulatory sprinkle. Let's say if we're selling a piece of real estate or land and it's a fractional ownership, how are you going to register it on your tax reports? Can you even do that? When you sell it, how you proceed with the proceeds of that sale? You know, all those little things that don't sound important, but on the larger scale, we're going to have a lot of friction. So we have to make sure that we solve that or we address that, and then that will truly bring more liquidity to the market. It will open so many doors to the newcomers to finally own the fraction of them, of art, real estate, you know, and sell it and have a very liquid and efficient secondary markets. But for that, we need to deliver and do better than the industry did in 2017. So I, as I said, I hope I'll be proven wrong. Then when it comes to DeFi area, there are so many good companies that build privacy-based solutions on the blockchain when they stay yet compatible with the regulatory aspects, and they protect you and your behavior when it happens on the blockchain and in those environments. This is something that I'm very passionate about because privacy is one of the human rights, but we have to interact with the immutable and transparent nature of the blockchain. So companies that will actually deliver the usable method of interacting me as Anastasia Plotnikova on the blockchain and disclosing that I'm Anastasia when I'm interacting with you, if we want to do that, as individuals interacting on the blockchain, that'll be fantastic. So these two things that I'm hoping for, but privacy is so important.
I couldn't agree more. These are two of my favorite topics, or I shouldn't say topics, areas that Web3 can really help with. You know, identity, IP, rights, creative rights, your rights,
exactly,
ownership. I love, you know, I've been tracking and working with folks who have helped pioneer ERC 721 and NFTs over the years. And I've got early glimpses as like digitizing assets, whether it be a bottle of, you know, vintage wine, a home in Florida or in Europe, whatever it may be. When that happens, and it is actually happening, there are folks out there. This is one project that I absolutely love. This guy created a solar farm, and you can actually lease out via smart contracts sections of power. It's endless, but it's one of those things that people don't realize. When you are able to truly digitize your assets, whether it's your home or anything else, you now can show banks, you can show other centralized and decentralized financial institutions that your net worth is truly worth more. And then that's ballast and weight for you as an individual or a business to actually propel yourself further and do more and perhaps get more funding. So it's 100%. Really wild open. Wild, wild west, and it's amazing what we'll be able to see happen.
Yeah, you know, and this is, you said such an important thing that then you can show this wealth and value that you have as a company or individual in the monetary sense to get a loan, to expand your business or to improve your personal home. But now imagine in this day and age, like meaning today in April, if you'll take all that information and you go to the bank, oh boy, it's going to be hard, you know, to argue with them. They'll be looking at that saying, what I'm looking at, you know, is goodbye. You know, let's chat when you bring me a tangible asset. This is what I was saying when there is still this friction that we have to solve, you know, and I don't think we can solve it only through educational means, educating financial institutions. Of course, there will be pioneering ones, and they do exist, that will understand that this is an asset and that they can potentially repossess that asset if you default on your loan, as an example. But we as an industry, we need to lobby and lobby in the positive meaning of this word to the regulators or respective little agencies that control those aspects. You know, so the, I don't know, environmental agencies, they will see, all right, this is a solar project. They can get a grant. So what that it runs on the blockchain? You know, those little things. So it's there is so much work ahead of us. And by work, I mean just this good educational work to work with different governmental agencies so they'll truly understand how much value there is in this industry, in the tokenization, and how by helping us, they can get more tax revenue. This is what it comes down to.
I think that's a great, great point, Anna. The more no one in Web3 is saying, oh, you know, we don't want regulations. They're actually saying, no, we want to work with you on creating the right regulations. And if you do that, it's like shooting yourself in the foot, like the IRS or whoever else, what other government entity is, they're shooting themselves in the foot. The more they work, the more they understand, the more tax money they can get.
Exactly.
You know, and you don't have to be egregious, a 44% capital gains tax on crypto is ridiculous. Come on, man. Like it's ridiculous. And I think things will change.
Yeah.
And in fact, one of the things that people you brought up and I brought up too, is like going to a bank for a business loan or whatever. Now in the next couple of years, you may go to a bank, but you're going to have the option to go to Anna or Rich as a bank. Individuals will become their own bank, right? So as people amass certain wealth within the Web3 world or crypto world, they can become their own bank and or a lending partner to other people. So that blows my mind. And I love that is banks are whatever. Maybe, you know, they have to change their game, but really quick.
They are changing their game without disclosing any names, but here in this cold side of the European region, there are quite a few banks that have massive blockchain development departments within themselves. You won't see it publicly, but it does exist, and they're exploring, they're looking, because those institutions, they're so profitable and large, because A, of course, they captured a lot of markets and force us into using their services. That's one. But secondly, they know that they have to capture this new generation of users, and they're going to do it by all means. If it will be introducing crypto in one way or another, and here the European Union, starting next year, this year, they already can do that, offer their very limited offering as a credit institution due to the MiCA regulation. They are going to do everything because they want this growing and new generation of users that love NFTs, love gaming, they love virtual world. They don't see the difference between, you know, stable coin or euro or digital dollar that they see on their app. They want to retain them. So Web3 will have to come up with more solutions if we want to this, you know, decentralization to stay and evolve, actually, because they're coming with CBDCs, with very low costs, with convenience. And now e-money is e-money. You know, how you will know as a user if you're transacting on euro based on the blockchain or just normal euro, right?
Yeah. And, you know, all money is digital. It's just how it's recorded, right? And tracked, right? So I think we're, you know, everything looks like everything's going to plan, I think, for the most part. And I'm very excited. And I know you are super excited about the space that, you know, you're co-building with the rest of the world, really. It's the world's computer, and that's what I love about it. And Anna, this has been a fascinating conversation, and so many little details that you and I would love to splinter off and do other episodes with you, or quick chats, or, you know, round tables or whatever in the future, for sure. Where can our listeners find out more about Phidium?
Well, first of all, I'll be happy to be back. And there are so many things that we have still have to discuss and cover, right? They can find us on Phidium.group, and on X, please follow Phidium HQ.
Excellent. And for our viewers and listeners, I will link down below of all of Anna and Phidium's information, and you'll start to see lots of stuff come out from MVMT, Web3 Impact, and of course Phidium together over the next couple of weeks. So Anna, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you discussing a lot of amazing and important topics in TradFi and DeFi worlds, and learning more about your product. And we look forward to tracking you.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a blast. And there are so many more things to discuss between DeFi, TradFi, HaFi, and what else.
Yeah. It's a lot, but we'll get there, and it's awesome. But I think this is really a fun episode, and thank you so much. We look forward to learning more and keeping track.
Thank you so much.